Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on drought right after this message. You know, the average American household making between $20,000 and $30,000 a year spends about 16% of that, or around $5,000 of its income, on food. And if the household is making between $40,000 and $60,000 a year, they'll spend about 10%, or about $6,000, on food. Now, 12% of American households purchase organic produce, and they buy from health food stores. They buy from organic produce salesmen and farmers markets. Now, that translates into more than 34 million people coast to coast and border to border. And already there are more than 4,000 small organic farms producing organic fruits and vegetables and meats on 25 acres or less. That's right, 25 acres or less, and making at least $100,000 a year serving this growing specialty market. And some of these farms are as small as 3 acres, and they're in every state in the union. You know, old Henry Kaiser summed it up quite nicely when he said of his business success, "Find a need and fill it." And here's a need just waiting to be filled. Now, the law school has a program to teach you how to make $100,000 a year on 25 acres or less. Now, this is a 5-day school that includes lessons on marketing, business plans, growing organic foods, and law. Why don't you call today and order my free 4-hour CD package? It's entertaining, informative, educational. It's free. And you can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, just go to the website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send me an email request for your free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. The Colorado River is running lower today than it ever did during the drought and Great Depression years of the 1930s. That's a shocker. The drought that has now gripped the western 11 states of our union, excluding Alaska and Hawaii, the 11 continental states, is now more severe than the Dust Bowl years of the 1930s. Nobody quite understands why. I suggested in the last program that God Himself has brought this drought upon the western states. But it gets better than that. You know, if we're only in the middle of a drought, like Lake Powell might be very close to some very dramatic problems, insufficient water for the Glen Canyon Dam turbines would be only the beginning, because at that point, much of the lake bottom would be exposed, creating a vast environment for noxious weeds like tamarisk and thistle. The next step in the spiral would come at what is called the dead pool, where decades worth of agricultural chemicals at the lake bottom would begin mixing more actively with the reactivated river. The question then, environmentalists say, is what would happen to the Grand Canyon just south of the dam? Now, notice that we're talking about Lake Powell drying up. Now, you know, that's pretty significant, wouldn't you say? Lake Powell is about the second largest man-made reservoir in the country. I believe it's right after Lake Mead. And to think that that body of water is in the process of drying up, when? Oh, it's just around the corner, about 2006. Now, they go on to say that Americans won't stand for the Grand Canyon being endangered, or so said John Weisheit, Weishit, H-E-I-T. The conservation, or the conservation director for Living Waters, it's an environmental group in Moab, Utah, that advocates removing the dam at Glen Canyon and allowing the river to return to its natural course. In another year, they're going to be talking more seriously about Lake Powell in the Congress. But the fact is, no one knows. The weather could change tomorrow. Many past western droughts have ended suddenly with a bang of precipitation, but some dry spells persisted for generations. Now, from about 900 to 1300 AD, scientists say periodic drought in the West was the norm. Only a few times during that period, according to tree ring growth measurements, was precipitation anywhere near the relatively high levels of the 20th century. What is unusual is not the drought periods, but the above-average wet periods, said Dr. Robert Webb. He's a hydrologist with the Geological Survey who specializes in the Colorado River. Now, I pointed out to you last time that in Deuteronomy 28 and Leviticus 26, the first 14 verses, God himself said, I'll give you rain in due season. Rain in due season. That's adequate rain or above adequate rain. He went on to say that if you don't follow my statutes, judgments, and commandments, I will withhold the rain and I'll give you a drought. Of course, nobody believes that. I'm just making a report. I'm an investigative journalist, so I want to tell you the other side of the story. Nobody seems to know why, so I wanted to share that with you and tell you, well, let me tell you why. You want to know why? You threw God out of your public affairs and threw the Bible and God out of your public schools. We've been giving him the finger as a nation. We've got 28 million sodomites in this country that we've given civil rights status to. And then you wonder why you get four hurricanes in 1 month in Florida. You wonder why there's drought for 6 or 7 years in the West. I mean, come on, boys and girls. You know there's a cause and effect relationship. You know every time you break a law, there's a penalty to pay. Now, already in Las Vegas, the Regional Water Agency is removing the equivalent of a football field of grass every day from front lawns, playgrounds, and golf courses to save an outdoor water. Further downriver, Arizona officials are pumping billions of gallons of water into the aquifers to save for an even drier day. Electricity has become a concern. The Western Area Power Administration, the federal agency that distributes power from hydroelectric projects in the Rocky Mountain West, plan to reduce by about 25% the amount of electricity that it can promise in future years. California, already short of electricity, can now look to a 25% cut in the amount of electricity that's coming off of the Colorado River. In Los Angeles, a representative from the West's largest urban water agency, the Metropolitan Water District of Southern California, is among a group of Western water officials dusting off plans to help limit evaporation from reservoirs, which could save billions of gallons. One idea is to pour a non-toxic substance over the reservoirs to form a water-trapping barrier. The group, which has been holding meetings, is even looking at far-off solutions like raising the height of Hoover Dam so that more water could be collected and saved during wet times. We understand we have a problem and we're working on it, said the Los Angeles representative Dennis Underwood. He's a former head of the Federal Bureau of Reclamation, which oversees dams and reservoirs in the West. Let me pause and make an observation here. Could it be that the reclamation, this is the Los Angeles representative Dennis Underwood of the Federal Bureau of Reclamation, could it be that they intend to thwart the drought? Is this man saying, God, we are going to beat you at your own game? You know, my common sense would say to me, why don't you find out what the cause of this problem is and then go to the cause and solve it rather than treat the effect? Going on, there are also worries downstream from Powell at Lake Mead, which serves Nevada, Arizona, and California. It could drop low enough as early as next year to force officials to declare a drought emergency. That would hurt the booming southern Nevada economy through significantly higher water rates and outright bans on things like new swimming pools, said Patricia Mulroy, the general manager of the Southern Nevada Water Authority. Mr. Raley of the Interior Department said that he wanted the states to consider a water bank in which unused water could be released or sold across state lines. Some previous efforts to create banks with federal oversight have been contentious because they were seen as, by smaller states, being a means to funnel more of the river to water-guzzling California. But the notion of cutting private water deals on the Colorado is gaining broader acceptance, in large part because of the drought. Now, the most celebrated example was a deal last year to sell irrigation water in the Imperial Valley of Southern California to the Urban Water District in San Diego. Some advocates for agriculture fear that the water to the highest bidder could ravage ranches and farms if the owners were induced to sell their irrigation rights. But private market supporters say the truth, like it or not, is that farmers own most of the West's water, and ultimately there will be fewer of them. And there is some concern that if the Colorado River goes into crisis, the ensuing tangle of litigation over water rights, endangered species, and border disputes could undo the system of Western water law that has evolved over the last 100 years. Some say that would be a good thing. Now, the law of the river is hopelessly, irretrievably obsolete, designed on a hydrological fallacy around an agrarian West that no longer exists. Professor McCool at the University of Utah said that after 6 years of drought, somebody will have to say the emperor has no clothes. Water officials in Arizona and Nevada say they would also like to rethink the law of the river, but to put their states on a more equal footing in sharing the Colorado River. But Mr. Raley said that such talk invites disaster and chaos, especially during a drought. And there isn't the time to plunge into chaos, he said. Other people who live here on the fringe of Lake Powell say that the West's great reservoirs have, in their very decline, proved their value in stretching out the limited water resources and underline the difference between past civilizations here that anthropologists say were wiped out or displaced by drought. Well, let me pause here and make another observation. Anthropologists are able to identify past civilizations and cultures that used irrigation in the Southwest for their existence. They disappeared because of drought. I'll show you a little later a number of scriptures in the Bible where God says that he uses drought as a punishment. It's kind of a reward and punishment, a carrot and stick type operation. Most of you have probably never heard of that. I don't doubt that. I mean, after all, you wouldn't learn it in church. Churches don't teach the scripture, and you certainly wouldn't learn it in public school. The Bible's been banned from public school. But there are a number of instructions in the scripture concerning this thing of drought and rain in due season. You're not getting rain in due season in the West. The 20th century had an above average amount of rain. Why? Past civilizations have been destroyed and driven off the land by drought. What makes us think that we, you know, modern 21st century American man, because we've built some dams and reservoirs and we're technologically advanced, can beat God at his own game? If 7 years of drought won't do it, would 14? If 14 won't do it, will 28? If 28 won't do it, will 56? I mean, if the guy that claims that he's got the power to withhold the rain just keeps it up, aren't you going to run out of gas at some point in time? Hang on, we got to take a break. We'll be right back with more on drought in the West when we return right after this message. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States and worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to my website, that's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. And the Law School is a private, non-profit, non-commercial, non-sectarian law school, and it's open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, go to the homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the webpage at georgegordon.org. All right, we're talking about drought. Well, the people back in the old days had nothing to catch to save their water, but we do, said Donald W. Thompson. He's the district manager of the Washington County Water Conservancy District in southwestern Utah. Speaking of the Indians and the Indian culture in times past, they didn't have dams like Lake Powell and Lake Mead. And he said, I'm a believer that history repeats itself. Long-term drought could return, Mr. Thompson said, but I suspect that our civilization can weather this. Now, extreme drought is best described as parts of the west and northern Great Plains. From the brittle hillsides of southern California to the drying fields of Idaho, from Montana to New Mexico, a relentless drought is worsening across most of the West, and water supplies are dwindling, and the threat of wildfires is rising. Most of the West is headed into 6 years of drought, and in some areas, they're looking at 7 years of drought. So said Rick Ochoa. He's the weather program manager at the National Interagency Fire Center in Boise, Idaho. Arizona is facing its worst drought on record. Two enormous reservoirs on the Colorado River are only half full. Some farmers in southern Idaho may not get any irrigation water this summer. And irrigators in western Nevada are threatening war with a country club that wants green grass for a national golf tournament. The mountain snowpack, which is a crucial reservoir that in a good year holds water until it's needed, was half of the normal March level and less in many areas. We had one of the warmest Marches on record, and we didn't get any precipitation almost anywhere in the West, said Kelly Redmond. He's the regional climatologist for the Desert Research Institute's Western Regional Climate Center in Reno, Nevada. So not only did we not add to our supply in March, which is usually a very healthy month, but the temperature was so warm that the melting started early. The mountains of Colorado and northern New Mexico got more than a foot of snow this weekend, and meteorologists said the Albuquerque area could be looking at record rainfall this month, but it's only a start toward recovery. It rains a little here, it rains a little there, and the heavens have been locked up like a bank. It's locked up. God said that he would cause it to rain on some places, and he said he'd turn our heavens to iron and our earth to brass, referring to drought in Deuteronomy 28. He said it'll help. It just depends on how soon the next rain comes. Farmer Larry Pulser said in Colorado's Washington County, it'll buy us some time, he said. The U.S. Natural Resources Conservation Service said there is a potential for water restrictions and widespread crop and pasture losses in central Nevada, southern Idaho, most of south-central Montana, and eastern and southwestern Utah. Most of southern Idaho and parts of southwest Montana are in exceptional drought. That's according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. That's a step worse than extreme drought, which the USDA said best describes other parts of Montana, Utah, Wyoming, Arizona, New Mexico, Nevada, Oregon, and Colorado. With dry trees raising the risk of wildfires, it's not just farmers who will be hurting. Already this year, 10,000 acres have burned in Arizona, along with 8,500 acres in Colorado. In terms of fire, I think everybody is very nervous, said Chris West, vice president of the American Forest Resource Council in Portland, Oregon. Have you heard anything about wildfires? You know, last year, it was in the news. This year, nothing. All we hear about is Kerry, Bush, and Iraq. Kerry, Bush, and Iraq. Nothing about the drought. Nothing about the forest fires. Not a word. Other than perhaps in your local newspaper. Now, the National Interagency Fire Center said that the greatest fire risks were in Southern California, the Four Corners region of Arizona, New Mexico, Colorado, and Utah, and the Intermountain region of Idaho and western Montana. Now, researchers claim that the 1930s Dust Bowl created by unusual sea surface temperatures. Unusual sea surface temperatures. Well, back in the 1930s, they called it unusual. Today, we call it El Nino. What difference does it make what we call it? The results are the same, aren't they? Why drought? It's the question I've raised. Why? Now, the devastating U.S. drought back in the 1930s was caused by unusual sea surface temperatures, according to new climate research. The work could help predict future dry spells and demonstrates that tiny changes in ocean temperature can have a massive impact on the land. Let me pause right here and ask, why do we see these temperature variations in the ocean water temperature on the surface? What's causing that? Could it be that God is causing that? You know, we seem to think that we're really scientific and on top of things if we can go out and do some measurements. But we never get down to why. We can say, well, El Nino is caused by these temperature variations on the surface of the oceans. But when we ask, why do we have these temperature variations? Well, maybe it's sunspots on the sun. Can you tell me why do we have these variations in the sunspots on the sun? What's the engine that's driving it? Why are these changes occurring? Now, the researchers fed sea surface temperature data from the tropical Atlantic and Pacific Oceans into a computer. The computer model, which accurately predicted the drought, had affected three-quarters of the United States between 1931 and 1939. Now remember, I reported earlier that during the 1930s, all except two states, Maine and New Hampshire, received 15% lower rainfall or greater during that 10-year period. The Pacific Ocean was, on average, a few tenths of a degree cooler than normal during the 30s, while the Atlantic was slightly warmer. This combination was apparently enough to turn the southern plains, including parts of Colorado, Texas, Kansas, Oklahoma, New Mexico, into a giant dust bowl. The dust bowl is unique in the last 100 years, and that is because of the unusual combination of Pacific and Atlantic effects, said Siegfried Schubert of the NASA Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland, who led the research team. Okay. Now, we have done the research, and we found out that the temperature variation is what causes the drought. Now, let's ask the question, what causes the temperature variation? Well, it's the sunspots on the sun. Okay. Now, let's ask the question, what causes the temperature variation with the sunspots on the sun? Has anybody ever figured out that it's God Almighty Himself that says, okay, boys and girls, what we're going to have is a drought? I never asked, nor did God ever reveal in the Scripture, how it was that He created drought in the Middle East. back in Elijah's time, about 800 B.C., or how he did it to the Casa Grande Indians in New Mexico between 900 and 1300 A.D., but the moral of the story is he did it. Well, it's either God did it or it just happened. Either God did it or it just happened that way, just a caprice of chance. Well, more than 2 million farmers were forced from their land as the soil dried out. Now, at the time, it was estimated that almost 1 billion tons of topsoil blew off the southern plains in 1935. Now, once the soil had dried out, there was less evaporation, which meant even less rain. This formed a positive feedback loop that probably doubled the effect of the drought, says Schubert. They report their findings in the March 19th Science. Now, let me point this out one more time. I mentioned this to you. The Amazon Basin, we've been cutting 4,000 square miles of forest off of the Amazon Basin for the last 50 years. We're making more farmland so we can grow more soybeans, so that we can feed more people. As a result of this, between 1957 and today, the average rainfall in the Amazon Basin has dropped from 120 inches a year to 90 inches a year. Why? Well, because every mature tree that you cut puts about 1,800 to 2,000 gallons of moisture into the air. Whether it's trees or whether it's grass, the grass is giving off moisture into the atmosphere, which then goes up, condenses into clouds, and then rains again. Now, as I speak, it's raining here. And the reason that it rains so much here on the east coast of the United States out into the Midwest is because it's covered with forests, hardwood forests. And it's true that about 10% of our precipitation comes in off the oceans like a hurricane. But it's also true that the precipitation during the summer, which comes from thunderstorms, comes from not just the oceans, but it comes from the precipitation. That is, the water that's evaporating out of the ground through the leaves on the trees and the leaves on the grass into the atmosphere. Now take a look out in the deserts. It doesn't rain out there. They don't have any feedback in that loop. The water comes over from the Pacific Ocean and drops on Nevada, and that's it. You don't have a feedback loop. Now, when we get over here to the Midwest and into the East, we've got the feedback loop. Not only do we get the hurricanes and the tropical weather and the moisture off the Gulf of Mexico, but we also get the feedback. Now, we're not getting that. And out in the West, you've got the feedback loop, which has been cut. 7 years of drought starts to feed on itself. And researchers know that sea surface temperatures can have a profound effect on precipitation. Now, just look at El Nino. Changes in the Pacific can cause tornadoes over Florida and droughts in Africa, says Jonathan Bamber. He's a climatologist at the University of Bristol. But it's very surprising that these small temperature variations could cause such a huge drought, says Schubert. The Great Plains get most of their rain in spring and summer. The westerly trade winds that flow around the equator normally carry moisture westwards from the Gulf of Mexico over the United States, keeping the plains well watered. But a warmer Atlantic heats the air just above the sea surface, making it less dense and allowing it to rise. This opens the door for cooler, high-pressure air to sweep eastwards off continental America, so the wet air over the Gulf flows eastwards instead. Now, have you noticed? That's the exact effect. Notice all of the wet weather you're getting in the eastern United States exacerbating the dry weather in the west. Now, the same trade winds usually sweep westwards over the continent and the Pacific, picking up moisture from the ocean as they go, before doubling back and carrying their watery cargo back towards the United States in the upper atmosphere. A cooler Pacific disrupts this cycle so that the air returning to the United States is drier, flows at a slower, lower altitude, and is less likely to bring rain to the plains. Now, Schubert believes his team's computer model should work just as well for the Sahel region on the southern edge of the Sahara Desert, where changes in Atlantic and Indian Ocean sea surface temperatures are creating droughts. And at the moment, the model can give about 6 months to a year advance warning of a drought, including deep ocean temperature measurements in the calculations, and could improve its predictive power. Now, modern farming practices, such as improved irrigation, would moderate the effects of any future droughts. But the basic weather that caused the Dust Bowl will almost certainly happen again, Schubert says. And over the last 500 years, we've had these kinds of mega droughts about once or twice every century. Historically, these events are very likely. Why are they very likely? Is it because that in the past God has punished people with drought? And we can read that now in the tree rings out in the west. They take these bristlecone pines and they take a look at the cross-section of the rings and they go back, you know, for several thousand years and they say, well, gee, look at from today. Here's the outer ring. We just go on back here 500 years and we'll just take a look at the size of these rings. And gosh, look how close they are together here. Very low precipitation here, and you can actually measure that. The fact that we're able to measure it doesn't tell us why. And that's the point of these two programs here on drought. Let's see if we can figure out why. Well, drought, who's to blame for this drought? Is it Mother Nature? Drought's an ugly word. Its very mention evokes images of desolation and suffering. In the Old Testament, its mere mention suggests punishment by Yahweh. And in some instances, it's regarding that punishment. Scripture is not only prophetic, but it's quite relevant to our modern times. So let's take a look here at this concept of drought from the Bible. If you got a Bible handy, dig it out. And I went ahead and looked at about 6 or 8 examples of drought here in the Scripture. So I thought, well, let's take a look at the unmentionable, the Bible, and see if there's a cause and effect relationship here. Take a look at Deuteronomy 11, verse 17, as a starting point. Deuteronomy 11, verse 17. And then the Eternal's wrath be kindled against you, and he shut up the heavens, and there be no rain, and that the land yield not her fruit, unless you perish quickly from off the good land which the Eternal gives you. In verse 16, he says, take heed to yourselves, that your heart be not deceived, and you turn aside and serve other gods and worship them. What do you mean, turn aside and worship other gods? Let's see, could that be, we worship the United States of America and California, and we throw the Bible and the Creator God out of our classrooms and out of our churches? Could that be? And as a result of that, verse 17 comes into play, and the Eternal's wrath be kindled against you, and he shut up the heaven, and there be no rain, and that the land yield not her fruit. Now, you know, drought's been around for a long time. In fact, the last big drought during the 1930s is what actually precipitated this whole concept of let's build Lake Powell. Let's build Hoover Dam. It's because we want to capitalize on the water. We want to use it for irrigation. We want to make money. And then when the drought occurred back in the 30s, you know, somebody woke up and said, hey, listen, this might happen again. Sure enough, it has. But there's more to it than that. In 1 Kings chapter 8, 1 Kings, chapter 8, verse 35, there was a dedication of the temple. And while this temple dedication was going on, I'll start here in verse 1, Solomon assembled the elders of Israel and all the heads of the tribes and the chief of the fathers of the children of Israel unto King Solomon in Jerusalem, that they might bring up the Ark of the Covenant of the Eternal out of the city of David, which is Zion. So they're going to bring it up and put it in the temple. So during this dedication of the temple, the first temple of Solomon's, they had a big meeting and they had a big party and everything is going along pretty well. And in verse 35 we read, while this is in process over here, he said, when heaven is shut up and there is no rain because they have sinned against you, if they pray toward this place and confess your name and turn from their sin when you afflict them, then hear you in heaven and forgive the sin of your servants and of thy people Israel, that you teach them the good way wherein they should walk. Well, is one of the good ways in which we should walk is to take 28 million sodomites and give them civil rights? Is that one of the good ways? Do you think that's a good thing to do? Or do you think it's a good thing to create a Federal Reserve Bank and use paper money instead of just weights and balances like we were instructed to do in Leviticus 19, 35, and 36? Or do you think it's a good thing to abandon the Sabbath and Sabbath keeping and keep our stores and our businesses open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, like Walmart and Harrah's and Circus Circus and casino gambling? I just throw it out for your consideration. I mean, I know nobody's going to change. That's not the point. The point is, what's the cause and effect relationship that causes drought? And remember, drought is just one of 64 life-threatening problems that are revealed here in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. So I've just zeroed in on one of 64. Then after you get rid of the drought, or once you've solved the drought problem, you got 63 more that you need to solve. Like AIDS. You know, that's a life-threatening disease. Second Chronicles 6, verse 26, has a little bit more to the story of drought. What causes it? Second Chronicles 6, 26. See if I can find it here myself. 2 Chronicles 6, verses 26 through 30, goes like this. When the heaven is shut up, and there's no rain, because they have sinned against thee, yet if they pray toward this place and confess thy name and turn from their sin, then when you do afflict them, then hear thou from heaven and forgive the sin of your servants and of your people Israel, when you have taught them the good way wherein they should walk, and send rain upon the land which you have given unto your people for an inheritance. If there be dearth in the land, if there be pestilence, if there be blasting or mildew, locusts or caterpillars, if their enemies besiege them in the cities of their land, whatsoever sore or whatsoever sickness there be, then what prayer or what supplication soever shall be made of any man or of all of your people Israel, when everyone shall know his own sore and his own grief and shall spread forth his hands in his own house, then hear you from heaven, your dwelling place, and forgive and render unto every man according unto his ways, whose heart thou knowest, for thou only knowest the hearts of the children of men. All right, so when you have this drought, or mildew, or pestilence, or flood, or some of these other God-created punishments, notice here that if the people will repent and pray toward this place, and if you'll pray and ask God, He will forgive you and take the drought away. Do you believe that if George Gordon were to pray to God himself today to relieve the drought in the West, that God is going to listen to George Gordon? I don't believe it for a minute. You can't take 50 or 100 million people over here all breaking the law of God and have one man intercede. You got to have, you know, some large portion of that 50 or 100 million people out there in the West. It doesn't have to be all of them, but, you know, somewhere up near half. About half of you people out there in the West would have to start praying and asking God to remove this curse, remove this plague. Do you really believe that half the people in the Western United States are going to turn from their criminal behavior and obey God and keep His commandments? Yeah, I don't believe it for a minute. There's another one here in chapter 7, verse 13. Chapter 7, this is 2 Chronicles 7, 13. He says, "If I shut up heaven that there be no rain, or if I command the locusts to devour the land, or if I send pestilence among my people, if my people, which are called by my name, shall humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then I will hear from heaven and I will forgive their sin and I will heal their land. I'll shut this drought off if you people will pray and ask me to." Oh, one more thing. If you will turn from your wicked way. Well, what is our wicked way here in the United States? You ever thought about that? What are some of the things that we do here in the United States that could be called a wicked way? Let me just give you a couple of three examples. How about Christmas? Christmas is prohibited in Jeremiah 10, verses 1 through 6. It's a criminal act. How about eating pork? Prohibited in Leviticus 11, verse 7. Or how about the practice of Easter? Prohibited in Jeremiah 44, verses 17 through 19. How about unjust weights and balances like Federal Reserve notes and stocks and bonds? Prohibited in Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. Now, I'm not going to take the time to go through and preach a sermon. I'm not a preacher. I'm a journalist. I just wanted to point out that in America, there was a time in America when we practiced most of the laws of God. We actually taught these laws here in the United States in our public schools. And as recently as 1947, the Gospel of John, you know, that Gospel in the New Testament, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, the Gospel of John was being taught in the public schools of Dallas, Texas, as recently as 1947. That was before we got illumined to this concept of the separation of church and state. We never practiced separation of church and state for the first 150 years of our existence, boys and girls. That's a fiction that was created by our politicians. It wasn't something that our founding fathers engrafted upon us, or our Constitution does. I just thought I'd bring that out for your consideration. Now, there's no such thing as a broken law without a penalty. Drought is a penalty for the violation of law. Now, there's 133 titles of law. We Americans still practice 51 of those and violate 82. So the good news is we're still practicing 51 of the laws of God in the United States. For instance, when we kill animals in our packing houses, we still bleed them. That's what the law requires, and we do it. Then we turn around and take that blood and feed it to our calves. And then, of course, we don't practice the blood law in this country. We Americans take the blood law and we mainline the stuff. We have the Red Cross, you know, to give us blood transfusions. But I'm just pointing out that there's one law there. But we're in violation of 82, and because of these violations of these laws, now there's some penalties that come upon us. And drought is just one of 64 penalties that we're beginning to see here in the United States, and started to begin to see around 1950, for which there's a cause and effect relationship. Well, we got to take a break here. We'll be right back with the conclusion on this story of drought when we return. I'll bring you up to date here on Luke 4, verse 25, and we'll talk a little about a guy by the name of Elijah, who brought 3 years of drought upon Israel back in the 8th century B.C. Stand by. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. You know, during World War II, our parents and grandparents planted victory gardens that helped to provide their own food and fiber for themselves and for their country. Today, over half of the food that we eat in America is imported from outside of our borders. That's right, half of it comes from imports. And our food is being produced from hybrid seed that will not reproduce, and it's nutritionally deficient. Now, Adolf Steinbrom of Fairbanks, Iowa, put the matter into perspective by having samples of corn tested for nutrients that are usually added to commercial feeds, and compared to more than 4,000 samples of hybrid corn tested in 10 Midwest states in a recent year, Steinbrom and his open-pollinated corn contained 75% more crude protein, 875% more copper, 345% more iron, and 205% more manganese. The same result has also been seen in the content of calcium, sodium, magnesium, and zinc. Now, in the opinion of many eco-farmers, hybrid seed merely masks poor farming practices by producing bins and bushels of foodless food without the nutrients that are really food's reason for being. Now, if you'd like to know more about this multinational corporate monopoly of our seed and food supplies and how you can become independent from them, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package? Remember, that's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free of charge. And you can call and order yours right now. The number 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, just go to the website georgegordon.org. Click on to the email and send me an email request for that free General Law CD package. That's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're looking in the scripture here to find a cause for this drought. Take a look here in Luke 4, verse 25. Luke 4, verse 25. We'll start in verse 24 through 30. Listen to what the Messiah had to say about drought. Starting in verse 24, he said, "Truly I say to you that no prophet is accepted in his own country. But I tell you of a truth, many widows were in Israel in the days of Elijah, when the heaven was shut up 3 years and 6 months, when great famine was throughout all of the land. But unto none of them was Elijah sent, save unto Sarepta, a city of Sidon, unto a woman that was a widow. And many lepers were in Israel in the time of Elijah the prophet, and none of them were cleansed, saving for Naam the Syrian. And all they in the synagogue, when they heard these things, were filled with wrath, and they rose up, and they thrust him out of the city, and they led him to the brow of a hill, whereon their city was built, that they might cast him down headlong. And he passed through the midst of them, and he went his way." So when Jesus went into the synagogue and he said, you know, back in the old days here in Israel, during the days of Elijah, there was a great drought. A great drought that was sent upon the Israelites for their sins, for their criminal behavior, for their sodomy, among other crimes, Sabbath breaking and so on. And it just made these people livid. It made them so damn mad they wanted to kill him. Things haven't changed any. Nobody in America wants to hear somebody come along and say, you know why you got drought in the West? It's because of your criminal behavior. That's what's going on. And it'll get worse, not better. But listen, over in Revelation 11, there's a big drought coming that's spoken of in Bible prophecy here concerning the two witnesses. Flip over here to Revelation chapter 11. Listen to this little story here. "There was given me a reed like unto a rod." This is Revelation chapter 11, verse 1. "There was given me a reed like unto a rod, and the angel stood, saying, Rise and measure the temple of God, and the altar, and them that worship therein. But the court which is without the temple leave out, and measure it not, for it's given unto the Gentiles. And the holy city shall they tread underfoot 42 months. Now, 42 months is 3.5 years. Keep that number, 3.5 years. Notice that this drought in Israel during Elijah's time was 3.5 years. Going on in verse 3, I'll give power unto my two witnesses, and they shall prophesy 1,260 days, sacked in, or clothed in sackcloth. So they'll be dressed in Levi's, plain clothes. They will not be dressed in suits and ties like your politicians and your preachers. Now these are the two olive trees and the two candlesticks standing before the God of the earth. And if any man shall hurt them, fire proceeds out of their mouth, and they devour their enemies. And if any man will hurt them, he must be in this manner killed. And these two witnesses have power to shut heaven, that it rain not in the days of their prophecy. That's 3.5 years. 1,260 days, that's 3.5 years. And they have power over the waters to turn them to blood and to smite the earth with all plagues as often as they will. And when they shall have finished their testimony, the beast that ascends out of the bottomless pit shall make war against them and shall overcome them and kill them. Ah, so these two witnesses of God, like Elijah, are going to shut up the heaven for 3.5 years, and it's going to make the people of the earth so angry with them that they're going to kill them. Just like they did Jesus. The people were just so incensed at this guy for having the audacity to come in here and teach and preach and perform miracles and one thing and another, they killed him. And they're going to do the same thing with these two guys. And they of the people and kindreds and tongues and nations shall see their dead bodies 3.5 days and shall not allow their dead bodies to be put in graves. And they that dwell upon the earth shall rejoice over them and make merry and shall send gifts one to another, because these two prophets tormented them and dwelt, or that dwelt on the earth. And then after 3.5 days, the spirit of life from God enters into them, and they stood upon their feet, and great fear fell upon them which saw them. So here comes two witnesses that are going to bring drought, not just on the western United States, but over much, not all, but much of planet Earth. And nobody can touch them for 3.5 years. God will protect them for 3.5 years, and at the end of the 3.5 years, the people are going to kill them. Well, so much for going out here and warning people about the wrath of God. Huh? Now, this story that we looked at here in Luke 4 and in Revelation 11 is taken from 1 Kings chapter 17. 1 Kings chapter 17, the story of Elijah. Elijah was quite a guy. He was out one time minding his own business one day, and King Ahab and Jezebel sent by a SWAT team. And in the SWAT team, or the SWAT team gang that came by, there was 50 men. And of the 50 men in the SWAT team, God sent a lightning bolt down and killed 49 of them. And the one guy left alive ran back to the highway patrol headquarters, and he said, "My God, you won't believe the booby trap that Elijah and his followers set up and how they attacked us. They're nothing but a bunch of terrorists out there." So they sent out a second SWAT team to bring him in. Not just 10 guys. I mean, they sent out 50. And Elijah's all by himself. He's unarmed. He doesn't have anything to defend himself with. And God sent a second lightning bolt down and killed 49 of them. Shows you how powerless God is. He couldn't get all 50. He could only kill 49. And the one guy went on back and he said, "God, you won't believe it, but he did it to us twice. Ambushed us, they did. Elijah and this and his cult of followers, these terrorists out here." So they sent out a third SWAT team. Now, the guy that was leading the third SWAT team was a little smarter than the average. And he came up to Elijah and he says, "Now, Elijah, listen, lighten up. It's going to be all right. Would you please back off? Because if I go back without you, the king is going to kill me. And if I mess with you, your God is going to kill me." So about that time, Big Mike, the archangel, came over to Elijah and says, "Hey, Elijah, you think we got their attention?" I imagine Elijah was about ready to crap his pants. I would. And he told Elijah, he says, now go on back with this third SWAT team, and I got a message that I want you to deliver to Ahab and Jezebel, the king and the queen. It's almost like sending them back to the White House to talk to George and his wife, you know, and say, well, I want you to tell them that before the night is over, you're going to be killed, your body's thrown off of the wall of the city, and the dogs are going to lick your blood out of the dust. And that's exactly what happened to him. So I just wanted to suggest to you that this God of the Bible isn't nearly as powerless as we think he is. And that these droughts, and here in Revelation, or excuse me, I'm in 1 Kings 17, listen to this, Elijah the Tishbite, who was of the inhabitants of Gilead, said unto Ahab, as the eternal God of Israel lives, before whom I stand, there shall not be dew nor rain these years, but according to my word. He said, he walked into the king. It's like walking into George Bush saying, there isn't going to be any rain until I say so. Now, that's what's coming with these two witnesses of Revelation 11. Not because these two guys are super powerful. It's because they obey God, keep his commandments, and God is going to use these two witnesses to bring about a drought. So the purpose for this little mini two-part series here is to just point out to you that you've got the worst drought in the western United States since the 1930s, and in the news media, nobody can figure out what's causing it. So I just thought, well, let me make a suggestion. I think that the God of Israel is causing that drought, and that it's going to get a whole lot worse before it gets a whole lot better. And the solution to this is to turn from your wicked way. I mean, that's the purpose for the drought. That's the purpose for a flood. You know, you people down in Florida got four hurricanes in a month, didn't you? Now, the purpose for those four hurricanes, when God says, I'll make it to rain upon one place, and I'll turn your heaven to iron and your earth to brass in another place. This thing of flood, excessive rain, and drought, it's to send you a signal. When a tornado comes through your town, that's not a blessing, boys and girls. That's a curse. A drought is not a blessing. You know, under the benefits, you got 33 articulable benefits. God said, everything that you put your hand to will prosper. So if everything you're putting your hand to isn't prospering, then it's because you're not practicing the law. That's the bottom line. And the ultimate end of lawlessness and criminal behavior is a punishment. There's a penalty that comes upon us for the violation of every law. All right, we're about out of time, so let me leave you with a couple of thoughts here. These politically incorrect opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. So don't blame the network and don't blame the radio station. And these do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, staff, or management of the network or any of the radio stations that carry this program. So for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, just go to my website, that's georgegordon.org, or call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. All right, you've been listening to the Law Hour and editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Gordon Law School and the Law Hour, please go to my website. That's georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that's open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact discs, so for more information, just go to the homeschooling page at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Okay, there's the signal. It says my time's up. I've got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.